Over the last few weeks and months, I've been thinking hard about population and the genetic code of the human beings. And there's one book which outlines the history of eugenics. And it's not the Nazis. Before you get on your high horse and start talking about, oh, you know, it was the Nazis that killed all these people and they developed eugenics and everything, there's a lot more history to it than that. The idea of eugenics and genetic control started way before Hitler and way before the Nazis had anything to do with geneticism and the Aryan race and developing the superhuman. They got their ideas from the British and the Americans. Now, there's a book out there called Battle Hymn, and it's an audiobook. It's a very long audiobook, but I want to include a very short section. It's around 17 minutes, but I want you to just take this time to listen to the history of genetics, eugenics, and just how governments and very, very influential groups and people, and even some authors, have talked about us and how we should be controlled and how we should live. And the control is out of your hands.
Eugenics, anyone? In 1904, the Cold Springs Harbor Research Facility was launched by eugenicist Charles Davenport and funded by Andrew Carnegie, John D. Rockefeller, and Edward Henry Harriman. 3 years later, the first sterilization laws were passed in the U.S. Citizens with deformities or children with low test scores on their report cards were arrested and forcibly sterilized. It was the beginning of an incredible and shameful chapter in American history. The United States Eugenics Records Office was established in 1910. It aped the British system of creating a network of social workers whose job was to find and collect persons who fit their criteria for sterilization. These social workers also had the power to take children from families that fit their criteria for genetically undesirable individuals. In some cases, they had the power to euthanize or murder these persons. The Rockefellers expanded their eugenics policies to Germany in 1911, funding the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute. This organization would outlast the Kaiser and become a centerpiece of the Nazi euthanasia program in the 1930s. In 1912, the International Eugenics Conference was held in London. The roll call of respected scientists in attendance boosted eugenics to a level of widespread respect and admiration. Among its most ardent supporters was writer H.G. Wells, whose books and articles spread the gospel of eugenics worldwide. Wells was in favor of a single world government and aired his views in detail in his book, Open Conspiracy, H.G. Wells on World Revolution. In it, he claimed his one-world government should be a scientific dictatorship, guided by the principles of eugenics. Margaret Sanger, lover of H.G. Wells, promoted this philosophy in the U.S.
Oh, let me just chip in here a little bit about Margaret Sanger and Hillary Clinton. Margaret Sanger, well, there's a name. Have a listen to what Hillary Clinton has to say about Margaret Sanger.
Well, thank you so much. It's great to be back in Houston with so many friends and to have an opportunity to participate in the Planned Parenthood annual meeting. I have to tell you that it was a great privilege when I was told that I would receive this award. I admire Margaret Sanger enormously, her courage, her tenacity, her vision. Another of my great friends, Ellen Chesler, is here, who wrote a magnificent biography of Margaret Sanger called Woman of Valor. And when I think about what she did all those years ago in Brooklyn, taking on archetypes, taking on attitudes and accusations flowing from all directions, I am really in awe of her. And there are a lot of lessons that we can learn from her life and from the cause she launched and fought for and sacrificed so greatly.
By 1923, Sanger's eugenics campaign had received massive funding from the Rockefeller family. In a letter to eugenicist Clarence Gamble, Sanger revealed a scheme to recruit African-American religious leaders to their cause so they would act as Judas goats in luring black Americans toward sterilization programs and even extermination. She wrote, quote, "The most successful educational approach to the Negro is through a religious appeal. We do not want word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro population. And the minister is the man who can straighten out that idea if it ever occurs to any of their more rebellious members." The awful plan was crystallized in 1939 with Sanger's Negro Project, aimed at reducing the African-American population because Negroes, quote, "still breed carelessly and disastrously, with the result that the increase among Negroes, even more than among whites, is from that portion of the population least intelligent and fit." Sanger, who founded the eugenics organization that would become Planned Parenthood, was an open supporter in the 1930s of the Nazi genetic engineering program designed to create a super race. In her published work, The Pivot of Civilization, Sanger promoted the extermination of human weeds and the sterilization of genetically inferior races. This would extend to Catholics, fundamentalist Christians, Hispanics, and American Indians as Sanger became more anti-religious. Quote, "Birth control appeals to the advanced radical," she wrote, "because it is calculated to undermine the authority of the Christian churches." Eugenicist Madison Grant wrote The Passing of the Great Race, which became the Bible of racial philosophy and forced sterilization. Among the fan mail he received for the book was a letter from Adolf Hitler, who later would employ his pseudoscientific theories as justification for genocide. When he became Chancellor of Germany in 1933, one of Hitler's first acts was to pass eugenics laws that actually were modeled on those of the U.S. Within 3 years, Germany led the world in eugenics with an aggressive program that sterilized and euthanized citizens in the hundreds of thousands. By 1927, eugenics was being touted in America's churches, schools, and even state fairs. Contests offering cash prizes pitted churches against each other to see who could make the best case for eugenics in sermons. Some church fathers even went so far as to instruct their flocks that Jesus was pro-eugenics. Also in 1927, 25 American states passed forced sterilization laws. When lawsuits against this legislation reached the U.S. Supreme Court, it ruled in favor of the sterilization policies. Even Hollywood joined the pro-eugenics push, which was the theme of the 1934 film Tomorrow's Children. Charles Davenport and Professor Harry Laughlin were the scientists at the helm of the American eugenics program in the 1930s. The Rockefeller family funded their trip to Germany to advise the Nazi government and scientists on ways to streamline their eugenics program, including their program of extermination. Following the collapse of Nazi Germany, the Nuremberg trials did not prosecute the German scientists who had participated in the eugenics program, apparently because the sheer scale of Nazi extermination was an embarrassment to American and British eugenicists. In an attempt to deflect the negative publicity that grew out of the revelations of German atrocities, the eugenics principles attempted to disguise their work. The publication, Eugenics Quarterly, became Social Biology. The American Birth Control League became Planned Parenthood. They invented new psychobabble terms like transhumanism, population control, conservation, sustainability, and environmentalism to disguise their dealings. But their comments reveal the true nature of their intentions. National Park Service research biologist David Graeber wrote in the Los Angeles Times Book Review, quote, "Until such time as Homo sapiens should decide to join nature, some of us can only hope for the right virus to come along." And in the Council of Rome's publication, The First Global Revolution, the authors wrote, quote, "In searching for a new enemy to unite us, we came up with the idea that pollution, the threat of global warming, water shortages, famine, and the like would fit the bill. All these dangers are caused by human intervention. The real enemy, then, is humanity itself." This philosophy has had awesome effects on policies and life around the world. In the early 1960s, for instance, After the pesticide DDT was recognized as being responsible for killing mosquitoes in Guyana to a point where malaria had all but disappeared there, Club of Rome president Alexander King said, quote, "My chief quarrel with DDT, in hindsight, is that it has greatly added to the population program." In 1972, the U.S. government outlawed the use of DDT, despite the fact that a six-month EPA investigation had determined the pesticide was safe to humans and animals. The National Academy of Science in 1970 estimated that DDT had saved 500 million lives in the previous 20 years. Since banning the pesticide in 1972, at least that many lives have been lost to diseases like malaria. The brazen statements of eugenics proponents continue without contrition. In November 1991, Jacques Cousteau wrote in the UNESCO Courier, quote, "In order to stabilize world population, we must eliminate 350,000 people per day. It is a horrible thing to say, but it's just as bad not to say it." Geneticist Julian Huxley said that since eugenicists had founded the environmental and conservationist movements, these movements should be used as vehicles in forming a world government. He helped to create the World Wildlife Fund with Bilderberg founder Prince Bernhard and Prince Philip of Great Britain. It was Philip who made the remarkable comment to Deutsche Press Agentur, quote, "In the event that I am reincarnated, I would like to return as a deadly virus, in order to contribute something to solve overpopulation." Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, is a Bilderberg member, a Freemason, and a former director of the World Wildlife Fund. Huxley's brother, Aldous, lectured at Berkeley in 1962 and admitted that his iconic book, Brave New World, was not based on fiction, but on the research and planning that actually was underway. The book paints a gloomy picture of a future society in which entire populations are genetically engineered test tube humans, and the greatest insult would be, "Who was your mother?" In his lecture, Aldous Huxley added, quote, "I am inclined to think that the scientific dictatorships of the future, and I think there are going to be scientific dictatorships in many parts of the world, will be a good deal nearer to the Brave New World pattern than to the 1984 pattern. It will not be because of any humanitarian qualms in the scientific dictators, but simply because the Brave New World pattern is probably a good deal more efficient than the other. If you can get people to consent to the state of affairs in which they are living, the state of servitude, the state of being, it seems to me the nature of ultimate revolution with which we are now faced is precisely this. We are in the process of developing a whole series of techniques which will enable the controlling oligarchy, who have always existed and presumably always will exist, to get people actually to love their servitude. People can be made to enjoy a state of affairs which, by any decent standard, they ought not to enjoy. These methods combine methods of terror with methods of acceptance. There are various other methods that one can think of. There is, for example, the pharmacological method. You can imagine a euphoric that would make people thoroughly happy, even in the most abominable circumstances. These things are possible. The Nazi doctors experimented in this and much more horrific programs during World War II. Not only did they escape prosecution at Nuremberg, they were recruited by Britain and America to continue their work in those countries at comfortable salaries. Some of them were part of the crypto-eugenics movement, which was an underground science featuring many respected anthropologists and geneticists. A similar sweetheart deal was struck in Japan with the senior officers and scientists who had been conducting bioweapons research on a vast scale during the war. Their experiments claimed at least 3,000 human lives, many of them American and Chinese prisoners of war. Weapons were developed and used by Japan to spread diseases like anthrax in China. But following the war, none of these biological weapons researchers were prosecuted in the war crimes trials. Instead, they continued their work under the guidance and protection of General Douglas MacArthur's Military Occupation Administration. Several of the scientific murderers advanced to respected university positions in Japan. Aggressive sterilization programs continued in the U.S. until the mid-1980s. Its dark purpose was properly revealed by Bertrand Russell. Quote, "Gradually, by selective breeding, the congenital differences between rulers and ruled will increase until they almost become different species. A revolt of the plebes would become as unthinkable as an organized insurrection of sheep against the practice of eating mutton." Sterilization research has been revitalized in recent years, according to Dr. Truat, who says that currently patents are in place on a vaccine that causes spontaneous abortion. Quote, "They've been doing this in the veterinarian segment for a decade or so," he told the author. "Instead of cutting and snipping a cat, they just give them a vaccine that makes them sterile. This vaccine is a porcine bird virus structure. We have documented over 5,000 women that have aborted their fetuses after taking the vaccine, and that's just what we know about. And the majority of these aborted fetuses are African American. This is being covered up in Washington, where they say no women have had abortions using the vaccine. And yet you have Bill Gates last spring, 2010, admitting that they have a new vaccination program that would cause a 15% reduction in the U.S. population. The primary agenda in population reduction may not only be related to reducing the number of mouths to feed. Russell, like Huxley, Wells, and numerous eugenicists, frequently spoke of the oligarchs' belief that they are a separate and more advanced species than the common man. Wells predicted that humanity would split into two distinct species in 100,000 years. And evolutionary theorist Oliver Curry of the London School of Economics has written that he suspects a genetic upper class and a dim-witted underclass to emerge. Several geneticists have admitted that their goal is not to improve the human race, but to dumb it down so it would be more manageable. Bertrand Russell, who won a Nobel Prize, wrote that vaccinations containing mercury and other brain-damaging compounds could induce partial chemical lobotomies, creating a servile population. In his book, The Impact of Science on Society, Russell wrote, quote, "Diet, injections, and injunctions will combine from a very early age to produce the sort of character and the sort of beliefs that the authorities consider desirable. And any serious criticisms of the powers that be will become psychologically impossible." Mind-altering drugs intended to control populations are also part of the eugenics program, going back more than a century. By 2007, more than 20% of Americans were taking prescription antidepressant drugs. A quick study of the shocking instances in the last 15 years of children, postal workers, and business employees killing others with guns reveals that in nearly every instance, the perpetrators were taking, or had just gone off, prescription antidepressant drugs. Eugenicists even have initiated pre-crime policies in which fetuses are screened according to family histories of criminal behavior.
Okay, so far you're probably thinking, oh, this is all about America. It's not relevant to us here in the UK, Alan. You know, you're just scaremongering because of stuff that an American is saying about America. Really? Is that really what I'm saying? Well, take a listen to this.
This policy was adopted by Great Britain in 2007, following the U.S. example. Child Protective Services in Britain and America are now enrolling newborn children into criminal databases if they have a criminal family history. Beginning at age 2, these children will be forced to attend probation hearings. In 1974, the U.S. government made a third world population reduction an important national security issue. Titled National Security Study Memorandum 200, the operation is an echo of the British Commission on Population created by King George VI in 1944, which stated that a third world population explosion posed a threat to the international elite. The U.S. plan, created by Henry Kissinger, targeted 13 countries for massive population reduction. Kissinger recommended that the International Monetary Fund, IMF, and World Bank supply loans only if these nations agree to begin aggressive population control programs, including sterilization. Kissinger also used food diplomacy to reach population reduction goals and added that instigating wars also provided a solution. Kissinger also was involved in the Nixon administration's 1972 eugenics policy, directed by George H.W. Bush, then ambassador to the United Nations. Bush advised China on creating its one-child policy that has resulted, owing to the desirability of male children, to a preponderance of 30 million more men than women in that nation today. Bush also worked his magic in the U.S., directing the federal government to forcibly sterilize more than 40% of Native American women living on reservations. The men who seek to create a global government now are aggressively working to get nations in line on a worldwide one-child policy. China's one-child policy was a graduated initiative, initially taxing couples who had more than one child. Later, this lenient policy was replaced by imprisonment of those having more than one child. Similar proposals are being made now in the U.S. and Europe. Heavy donors to population reduction organizations include Ted Turner, who gave $1 billion to the UN for its policies in Africa. Bill and Melinda Gates donated $2.2 billion to the UN Population Fund and other similar groups. By 2007, the Gates had donated more than $30 billion to population control groups. This amount was topped by the $37 billion given by Warren Buffett to various population control groups. A chilling viewpoint on the eugenics movement came from Dr. Eric Pianka of the University of Texas Biology Department, who recently received a Texas Academy of Science Award. He took advantage of the occasion to say in his speech that the AIDS epidemic was no good because it was too slow. He instead praised the Ebola virus because it would kill 90% of the world's population much more quickly. For this mad opinion, Pianka received a sustained standing ovation from the audience, which contained many other scientists. Pianka also praised China as the leading world superpower, quote, because they have a police state and they are able to force people to stop reproducing. These philosophies by elitists have led to the inevitable.